The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favorite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me again is James Baggett. James, how are you?
Sorry about that, John. I'm back again.
Yeah, can't get rid of you.
It's sort of in my contract, I think. Must appear on podcast at least twice a month. I'm very good, thanks, John. How are you?
I'm good also. Yeah, it's been a busy week. I'm stealing your thunder, but it's been a busy week, isn't it? Preparing for our upcoming event on Monday.
Yep, it has been an incredibly busy week, and I've just got a few highlights I'd love to share with you. Is that okay?
I feared that might be the case.
I'll try not to steal too much of this podcast time. But no, I've done a couple of interesting things this week. The first one was a trip to London with Audi. I know, the big smoke.
Did you go on one of those red buses?
No, I wasn't allowed to do that. No, actually, I was very fortunate. I got picked up by Audi. They took us to an editor's dinner. There was lots of very important editors there and me. And we talked about all the things that have been happening in the Audi world and had a wonderful 2 Michelin-starred Chinese meal, John. Can you guess how many courses there were?
Well, I know the number, but I'm...
It was 26, John. Yes, it was 26. Yeah. And they came in collections, which I can't explain what that meant, but it was a very nice meal.
I've got a question. Did the first one arrive and it was called the A1? Then did the Q2 arrive? Then the A3? Then the Q3? Then the Q3 Sportback? Then the A4? The A4 Avant, really, the A5? Really fast. The A5 Sportback? The A5 Cabriolet? Et cetera.
No, but I wish I'd made that joke. Why weren't you there when I was there? That would have been really good. So there was actually a reason to be up there, and they were just talking about what they'd been doing this year, and they were saying they're going to be the number one premium brand, selling something like 130,000 cars this year. They said their Q4, their electric Q4 e-tron, is going to be their second best seller, which I thought was quite interesting, was 17,000 units this year. Mm. I thought that was quite an interesting fact for you. But yeah, it was nice to catch up with people and hear about what's happening with the industry on that day. And then I came back for a very early morning interview with the new Stellantis boss, Maria Grazia, which I'm not allowed to actually say what she said because it's under embargo. But I can tell you what I asked her, John. And let's put it this way. I spoke to quite a few Stellantis dealers in advance of having this conversation. And they're not very happy at the moment. You could actually say they're pretty cheesed off. So I asked her some horrible questions, stuff like why aren't Stellantis dealers making any money? Why are you not paying them their bonuses that they're owed? Why has there been so many problems with delivering cars to them? And why were you previously asking them to register cars in ports, something that we talked about? So you can imagine this interview could have got off on the slightly the wrong foot, couldn't it? But I must say, and I'm not going to say what she said because I'm not allowed to, but the way she handled these horrible questions was quite impressive. And I'm looking forward to writing up the interview, which is going to come out on December the 7th. So yeah, it's been quite an interesting week of manufacturer news and preparing for our used car awards. Anyway, how has your week been?
Not as exciting as that, but yes, there's been a lot of used car awards preparation, which I won't bang on about. But I will squeeze in a mention of our other event, Thinking Into the New Year, which is Car Dealer Live, of course. And as of today, there is a cheeky Black Friday offer on, isn't there?
There is a very, very good one as well. 30% off all tickets for dealers and supplier tickets and streaming. It's actually the first time we've taken any money off those supply tickets, isn't it? So it's only available until Monday at midnight or until John remembers to stop that deal, which is probably quite crucial, isn't it? So, Cardio Live, we've got people like Peter Waddell coming, Peter Vardy, Chris Wiseman from Wessex Garages, Peter Smythe from Swansway Motor Group. We've got Estelle Miller. She's one of the co-founders of the of EV Experts. Nicola Dobson from Stellantis. So we've got a whole range of panels. It's sponsored by Auto Trader. We've got a number of other partners who are going to be giving their exclusive research over at that event on March the 7th, 2024. So thank you, John, for the opportunity to plug that event. Very kind.
No problem at all. Well, before we plug any more of our future events, I will introduce our guest.
Good
our
idea. Guest
this week is Ollie Grummel, Commercial Director at Motorway. Lovely to have you on.
Hi, John. Hi, James. Yeah, fantastic to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
Very, very nice to see you. Nice to meet you virtually. I've got a number of questions, as I'm sure you can imagine. But firstly, we reported, and I think I actually talked about it on last week's podcast, about your two new innovations. Mm-hmm. There's the Instant Match coming and your dealer sales. That came out last week. Pretty sure we published the news on Thursday. So a week after that came out, what's the reaction been from dealers?
Yeah, no, we're thrilled, I think, with the reaction that that we've had to both of these. So we've literally had a couple of hundred dealers expressing an interest, signing up, and whilst we're kind of gonna roll it out with a very limited, curated number of dealers, and we will be going pretty fast once we've got a little bit more data and more insight into how it's working. So we do expect to move fast into kind of getting more and more dealers involved in both of those offers. I think what gives us a lot of confidence, especially on the motorway trade side of things, is that we thought this was the sort of thing that dealers would be enthusiastic about. Our insight tells us it's probably the number one thing that that dealers do request from motorway. That's what we've established through our surveys. That's what comes through in a lot of the discussions that we have with dealers. And I guess what's really encouraging from our side of things is that it really credibly probably builds on our core proposition and our successes to date. And you know, through trade, we've got the opportunity to, I think, build the best trade platform in the UK. You know, leveraging that profiling technology with the benefits of AI and all the detail that the dealers need to be giving, and really kind of get them the chance to take that overage stock and that part exchange stock and enter it into the auction with 5,000 dealers there to bid. And I guess when you team that up with something like Motorway Pay, which makes the transactions really simple and efficient, you get a really compelling proposition. So I think dealers have got that. And yeah, on Instant Match, to talk about that one for a second, it's I think this is probably the biggest complementary addition to the motorway proposition that we've been able to deliver. And it's one that I'm personally really excited about. I guess a lot of it comes down to the market that we find ourselves in at the moment. We'd like to think we support dealers and work side by side with the dealers, but we want to support them to move stock more quickly than they're maybe finding they're able to do at the moment. And I think literally we get millions of customers that will interact with the motorway platform, whether that's the core platform itself or total car check side of things as well. You know, and it doesn't take a massive leap to kind of go from that. If there's millions of people trying to sell their car, there's probably there are similar numbers trying to buy it as well. So we're in a really good position to be able to pass those no commitment leads through to dealers. And I was speaking to a dealer on Wednesday evening, and you know they're saying it's getting close to an average of 2 months to be able to shift this stock. And if we can move it into a couple of days, that's a fantastic benefit we're able to give, and you know, a really powerful addition to the dealer toolkit.
Yeah, it's, definitely.
Gone down well in a nutshell.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, very, very. Very good plug there. Very, very proficient and professionally done. Let's move on to the used car market and what you're seeing at the moment. Because I mean, right now, I mean, depending on who you talk to, I mean, it's very difficult times out there. I mean, used car prices are dropping quickly. We're back to a scenario where people are having to manage dropping prices and some cars dropping quite quickly. We've got an update later today with Cap HPI and what the latest is going to be for November, and that will be published on the website over the weekend, I think. it's difficult, isn't it, out there? And what do you think? What are you seeing? I remember when I was chatting to Tom on video, he said, we need a period of calm. We need it to settle a little bit. Have you got any further down the road of when you think that might happen?
Yeah, look, I think if I could predict markets, I'd probably be in a different industry and a different job. And but yeah, I think Tom summed it up pretty well last week. And that we work side by side with dealers, and we see the challenges that they're facing, and you know, we get a decent amount of insight as well. I think we should put it in the context of a really buoyant last few years. And I think we need to acknowledge that there's parts of the market that are still seeing quite a lot of activity, probably towards the lower priced end of the market. But with those dropping prices that we're seeing in the more premium side of things, it is going to be driving that degree of uncertainty that dealers continue to talk to us about. We know that they are then having to be selective, but I guess from talking to lots of dealers, we know that fundamentally the task that they have doesn't change. They need to buy the right stock. They need to price it correctly, and then you need to move it on quickly. And it's just adjusting to a different level of being able to do that. And I'd like to think, again, that's kind of where Motorway can come in and get the right stock with good pricing opportunities and an ability to kind of turn it relatively quickly. I think we're largely in line with what the industry insight suggests. You know, if we saw a 4% drop in prices in October, very likely to see a very similar number, I think, in November. Hopefully not quite so steep a drop in December, and then hopefully some kind of leveling out in the new year. I think that's what we think is going to happen. Mm. Although it's a bit of a watching brief at the moment to see how things play out. I do probably see December as quite a pivotal month. But yeah, I think as Tom articulated last week, that leveling out and degree of stability, I think, is becoming pretty essential for both the buyers and the sellers side of things. And I guess, you know, Motorway obviously don't buy and sell cars themselves, but we facilitate buyers and sellers to optimize their choices. And, you know, working side by side with them, we can feel their challenges and hopefully we're able to help.
See, one of the things that we've picked up, I feel not I mentioned it last week, and it's come from a number of people I've been speaking to, is these sort of buying bans that some dealer groups are on at the moment. It is so volatile out there at the moment. They don't want to restock while there are such drastic drops. Have you heard of those? And are you seeing that? Any evidence of that?
Yeah, I think, like I say, we do work side by side with the dealers, and we do know that with the challenges out there, some of the dealerships are on buying bans with a view. If some of the stock isn't moving for, you know, 6 weeks to 2 months, it's understandable. It's an understandable move that there'll be some buying bans and then the downward pressure on the prices through that. So yeah, it's coming through in the insight that we see. But then hopefully we're in a position to offer the variety and volume of stock to help dealers make the right choices when they are able to buy again. And you know, we think they'll the market will come back. You know, I guess what gives us a little bit of confidence in prices coming back is the fact, you know, in January there does need to be kind of more on the forecourt, and I guess theoretically as well, we've still got, you know, that shortage of supply from 3 years ago during the pandemic and things like that. So in theory that should come back again, providing that bit of upward pressure. But yeah, we hear what dealers are seeing, and we hear what dealers are saying to us. So the reality of the trade comes through in the commentary they give to us. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it's a little bit self-perpetuating at the moment? I mean, the visibility of used car prices and what's happening out there. I mean, the savvy guys always knew what was happening, but right now there's so many different data sources saying what's happening, reporting regularly, often throughout the month, and we write about it very, very regularly, what's happening with used car prices. Do you think that's causing a little bit of the panic, the fact that there is so much visibility out there and it's driving the market down at the moment?
I would say that it's always helpful to have more data rather than less. And yeah, more sources of insight is always going to be more helpful than, you know, stab in the dark and things like that. I guess a lot of the sources of data are pretty aligned, and the shape of the market is what the shape of the market is. So I do think it's probably helpful to kind of have different sources of information, and it's largely a similar story from what the industry insight is coming through and what I'm hearing from the individual dealers as well. There's not a great variety in the stories out, so I think there's a degree of alignment in the challenges that they're facing. So there might be a degree of it that could be self-perpetuating, but I think that's probably happening on the margin, if I'm honest.
And you did mention there that there are some areas of positivity. Can you talk to us about, you know, where those opportunities are, and actually on the other side, where the real pain is being felt?
Yeah, I think again in line with the conversations that I've had with dealers, it does seem to be that the lower priced end of the market, where there is still the activity. I think that's the prices there are holding up, and the activity there.
What sort of prices are you talking about there? I mean, what sort of price range?
I think we're probably talking about sub 6K on that one as the biggest one that's holding up to a degree. And then it's at the other end of the market that is seeing probably the biggest challenges that we're seeing with the enterprise and the franchise dealers that are normally responsible for that end of the market. I think it's been like that for a number of months, and you know, I guess we'll probably still see that carrying on into November, hopefully then improving again as we go into quarter one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, I think, over the next few weeks and months. We're certainly going to be following it closely, aren't we, John?
As usual, yes.
As usual. Right, should we do some stories and stop?
Some stories. If you haven't listened before, James and I have chosen our favourite stories from the car dealer website this week. We don't know what each other has chosen, and we're going to have a chat about each one as we go through. At the end, Ollie gets to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. James won last week, again, so he's going to go first.
Am I now? Excellent.
You are.
Thank you, John.
I assure you can give it to me if you really want to.
No. I will go for that, I think. Thank you very much, because there's lots of brilliant stories on the website this week. And I've got no less than three exclusives on my list. And I'm going to start with one of those. And that is news that used car auction house BCA is going to be holding its first physical auction since the pandemic. Now, this is quite big news for the industry, because BCA were very firm in their messaging after the pandemic that they wouldn't be going back to physical auctions. They actually made a large swathe of redundancies towards the end of 2020 as they shut down all their auction houses across the country and went to online sales only. They have been pretty firm in sticking to that since 2020. I mean, we're now at the end of 23, and they have decided that they're going to give this a go. So it is, this news leaked out to us that this was going to happen. The company was very slow in giving us a response to the fact that it was going to be taking place, because, I mean, some dealers I've spoken to have branded it as a bit of a U-turn. And since we've published it on social media, there's been a mix of reviews. Some people are very, very happy that these auction halls are going to be open again, saying how much they love going along to these auctions, seeing other dealers and chatting about the industry, and actually seeing some of these cars, especially at the lower end of the market, being driven through the halls and being able to make a much more sensible decision on how much they're going to pay for it. Whereas there are others who are just saying, yeah, this is a little bit of a U-turn, and they were very adamant, BCA, that they weren't going to do this, and so it's quite unusual that they're going back to it. BCA have said to us that it is a special Christmas event.
I love that.
Yeah, clever line, isn't it? Clever line. A one sentence comment is always very telling, I find. BCA are holding a special Christmas event at our Nottingham Centre on December the 8th, was what the spokesperson told us eventually. We did mean we had to publish the story first without a comment before we got that reply, but it did eventually come. I looked at this story when I wrote this and looked at some of the other businesses and what they did. Well, Mannheim did some reopened their auction halls, some of them at the end of 21, so they were pretty quick. And they
G3
moved
from, was even quicker, wasn't
G3
it?
G3 was even quicker, and a lot of the other smaller independent auction halls were desperate to open them again. And I think there is a place in the market for certain cars that dealers want to get out there and do it. And also, it is a social thing. You know, you go to a lot of the comments I've had on LinkedIn and Twitter have been about how important auction halls are for getting a feeling of what's happening out there in the market with other dealers. Sometimes selling used cars yourself in a dealership can be quite solitary, and it's only when they go to these sorts of events they meet other like-minded people. So yeah, I personally think this is a good thing for BCA. I don't see it as a U-turn. I think I'm glad that they've made the decision, and I'm pretty sure we will see that more auctions will be opening up for that company in the new year.
Yeah, I think it needed to happen. I'm amazed it's taken this long. This is what I got from the story when I first saw it. I thought, my instant thought was, oh, are they not actually doing that already? Because lots of others are. Yeah, and I think the other part of this, apart from the social aspect, which is all jolly nice, is the current situation with stock is people are having to stock much, I'm going to say, leggier cars than they were perhaps used to. And that does not suit buying online in quite the same way, as you've said. And with, you know, particularly as we've established in this podcast so far, it's the lower end of the market that's holding up really well, isn't it, in terms of values. And in a cost of living crisis, that is sort of what people want, is the really, you know, it's not all about leasing A-class Mercedes, is it? It's sometimes it's just something to get you by. Yeah. And that sort of stuff, buying online, is a bit dangerous sometimes, I think.
I just wonder what the thought process was at BCA after making...
Well, they thought Christmas is coming. What better way to celebrate than to stand in an auction lane on December the 8th? I think that's what they thought.
Great idea.
Yeah. I noticed you've picked this as well. This is you've chosen your first story around stock acquisition. Don't think I haven't noticed you playing to your audience here.
Well, it was a dangerous one because obviously it's a BCA, it's an auction house, and it might be difficult for Ollie to comment on that. So, I mean, if you don't want to comment, we would totally understand why.
No, I'm happy to comment. And I think it's a really interesting move. I've seen it on I think your site described as an experimental move. And I think you might be right. It links in nicely on the social side of it. Christmas is coming up. Maybe it is that kind of end of the market that does benefit from some of these physical, you know, touching and feeling the cars and getting a really good insight into them. You know, and it's another shameless plug. I'd like to think, you know, motorways demonstrate the art of the possible in not needing to do that through the profiling technology that we have. But I think it's interesting and one to watch.
Excellent. Thank you for commenting. That was very brave of you. Thank you. John, over to you.
Okay. I am going to keep it newsworthy this morning and talk about Sunderland and Nissan. So Nissan have had a bit of a media blitz this morning. If you put on any news channel, you would see a reporter standing with some cash guys going behind him or her on a production line, shouting very loudly over the machinery that Nissan has invested lots, or pledged to invest lots of money in Sunderland to make the forthcoming electric versions of the Qashqai, the Juke, and whatever will replace the Leaf. That means, I say, something like a £2 billion investment, I believe.
1.2.
Well, it's 1.2 themselves, and I think there's from the battery company, which is not Nissan. Nissan did set up a battery production facility in the Northeast when they started making the Juke, but it's now owned by a Chinese corporation called Envision, I think. So there's a lot of investment going into the Northeast, basically, including, I believe it's a second battery plant to match. I think it's one or two already, but it sounds like there's going to be 3 gigafactories, is how Nissan describe it. I'm not quite sure where this second one is. Anyway, so lots of investment going into the Northeast. Good news for the Northeast. Good news for UK car production. And as you can imagine, the government has jumped on it as well with lots of positive comments about how it's proving that they're doing the right thing and what their current plan is great for business and et cetera, et cetera. This comes off the back of some government news earlier in the week or in the month. I can't remember when they announced it, that they were going to invest a lot of money in green car plants and all these sorts of things. So this is the first thing we've seen to come out of that, really, isn't it?
The The point on this one is the Brexit seems to have been forgotten, doesn't it? I mean, if you rewind the clock a couple of years, they were threatening to leave, saying that Brexit was going to cause them all manner of issues. And the other thing that you have is this rules of origin, haven't you? I mean, if electric cars have to be built in a certain percentage of the parts have to be built in the country. I don't know the exact details because it is incredibly complicated. But
James, I can tell you.
Thank you. I'm glad you know more about it than I do.
I believe it's something like 45% of the value of the car has to come from either the UK or the EU. So that presents an issue if you're sourcing battery components from, let's say, China or Japan or somewhere like that, because it comes out. Well, actually, I don't know if Japan would count, because I imagine there's some sort of trade deal going on there. But basically, Nissan's, which is not quoted in our story, but Nissan's boss, I think, of the plant, I want to say, was quoted in the BBC's article. They obviously interviewed him, and they asked about Brexit, and he sort of coyly said, well, we're dealing with it in our own way, and their own way is to produce battery, set up battery factories in the UK, which, to be fair, Brexit or not, that is a sensible thing to do if you're going to make cars in the UK, isn't it? Because these are hugely heavy components to start shipping all around the world. So it does make sense to produce these things next to or close to the place where you're going to shove them in the bottom of your cash car. So I do get that.
You just wonder what's happened behind the scenes here, because I mean, I'm just looking back on our website as recently as February this year, we've written a story that a Nissan top executive has questioned the competitiveness of the carmaker's Sunderland factory. This was an interview with their chief operating officer, Ashwani Gupta, he's still there, isn't he? I'm pretty sure he is. But he said he was asked by a newspaper whether, at the time, this February, whether Sunderland could regain its competitive edge. And he said, that is a question that has to be answered. So
he left in July, I can tell you, James.
Oh, did he? Well, maybe that's why this decision's been made. Oh dear. But good news. No, good news for the North East.
Certainly. And one part of this was news that obviously the Qashqai and the Duke will continue to be made, and there'll be a new version of each of those. Kel Supri's there. But also this third model is the Leaf. I mean, Nissan are sort of dancing around whether it is going to be the Leaf or not, but they seem to have sort of said it will be a replacement for the Leaf, which is, I thought they were killing off the Leaf. Because the Leaf is a bit like the Toyota Prius, isn't it? It comes along and its sole purpose is to be the first battery electric car, or the first hybrid car in the case of the Prius. And then as everything else becomes hybrid and battery electric, it suddenly loses its niche and it just becomes a hatchback. So I'm interested to see what they come up with in the Leaf replacement mold.
Indeed. Shall I move us on from positive manufacturing news?
I knew where this was going.
Some negative manufacturing news, and this is the story that came out yesterday, again leaked to us. Thank you for the leaks; they're always appreciated. From Genesis, that it's going to be axed as a standalone firm in the UK. John, are you shocked?
I am shocked.
Let me continue. They're going to merge Genesis with Hyundai. Clearly, there's been a few issues there with that brand. The legal entity that was Genesis, the separate company, is going to be subsumed into Hyundai. And unfortunately, 83 jobs are now at risk of redundancy as a result of this. The spokesperson for Hyundai said that they going to be doing this from January the 1st and making a number of changes. But I just think this sort of points to some slightly wider issues with that brand. I mean, I have been very vocal, as you well know, John, about the fact that Genesis will simply not work in the UK, because nobody wants to buy one of those over an Audi or a Mercedes or a BMW. And unfortunately, I think we're seeing Infiniti Mark II with Genesis. They tried it before. They've tried it again. They launched this brand at a time when electric cars were gaining popularity, because there was a 2030 ICE ban that's now been pushed back by 5 years. We've had a year of hugely falling electric vehicle prices. Consumers have fallen out of love with them, and they're trying to sell an electric-only brand at very, very expensive prices, which is effectively a posh Hyundai. And let's face it, no one wants a Porsche Finder.
I think say,
very sad news, John. I know you love them, but I don't. I think the writing is on the wall.
Points there. I will just point out to our listeners that Genesis is not an electric-only brand. They offer a wide range of powertrains across their model lineup.
Do they?
Yes. Yeah, they've got petrol.
I thought they've already said that they're going to become electric-only.
Oh, yes, James, but name a car brand that hasn't said that, well, apart from Ineos, maybe.
I will stick to my point that nobody wants a diesel Genesis just as much as they want an electric one.
Okay, I'll grant you that. So a bit of clarity around this story, because it's not that Genesis is disappearing and suddenly we're going to have the Hyundai GV80 appearing in Hyundai dealerships. What is happening is Genesis's operations on the ground, or their head office, is merging with Hyundai UK, isn't it? Which is very sad from the point of view of jobs, I have to say, and I almost don't really want to talk about it while people are in redundancy consultations and all this sort of stuff. But I will say, I don't think that's not a huge surprise in itself, because to me, it was more surprising that Genesis was set up as an entirely separate entity. Because if you look at, okay, I don't want to keep using Infiniti as an example, but Infiniti did not have a separate office, head office from Nissan UK. It was all sort of integrated and the supply chain was all integrated and all that sort of stuff. I think to an extent, Lexus is largely the same. Lexus is based, I assume, at Toyota's headquarters in Epsom. Correct me if I'm wrong, James. And I think generally speaking, people we speak to about Lexus are the same sort of people we talk to about Toyota. And this is a brand that's existed for, well, I don't know, 33 years or something, isn't it? So that is a format that sort of works when your products generally come out of the same factories and come from the same countries, and your dealer partners are largely similar. I think it makes sense for there to be a bit more integration than there currently is. So perhaps I can't speak to why they set it up in the way that they did, but it's not a huge surprise to me that they're merging in this way. What this means going forward, though, I don't know. Does this mean that Genesis is going to stop being quite so separate? Is Genesis going to go the way of, let's say, DS, where they would shove it under the umbrella of a Citroen dealer and, you know, halve it off? So Hyundai would be half the showroom, Genesis would be the other half. Will it go that way? I don't know. Possibly. I think DS proved that didn't really work as a solution. So I suspect that's probably not the way they're going to go. But I don't. My wider point is, this doesn't mean Genesis is dead. This just means they're having a bit of a tidy up of how they operate.
I will stick by my predictions that it will no longer be here in the not too distant future. But Ollie, what are your thoughts on this one? Would you buy Genesis?
I'm probably not going to comment about whether I'd actually buy a Genesis myself. I don't currently own one. I think you're right to kind of say it's probably the opposite to the positive news coming out of the investment by Nissan in Sunderland, and I guess it's maybe indicative of some of the flux and some of the challenges again within the wider industry. So I think, like you say, sad news is if people have been impacted by it. And it's one to keep an eye on, and how Genesis choose to operate in future, if at all, like you say, is one to keep an eye on, I think.
I will say, in fairness to you, James, I do, and we had this conversation earlier this week, I do think Genesis as a brand is going to struggle slightly, because, you know, Genesis now is a little bit, I would say, sat where I am, Genesis looks a bit more fuddy-duddy than Hyundai. Hyundai's got some products like Ioniq 5, i20N, i30N. They've just unveiled the Santa Fe, which is this enormous square blocky thing that looks quite cool compared to the old slightly one. You know, those products and that brand is rapidly getting cooler, for want of a better word. And I don't
think Genesis is.
No, Hyundai is.
No, Hyundai. Hyundai, true. That is true.
Genesis is a bit Lexus-y, and perhaps that.
I mean, it is
a bit of a regeneration. Like, they're not playing on any of their strengths. They're not playing on, you know, Korean stuff is very cool at the minute. They're not really playing on that. It's just a sort of generic American-ish sounding brand, isn't it? A bit like Lexus was when it arrived.
I just couldn't describe to you what a Genesis buyer looks like. I mean, it's like the Korean Saab. I mean, like, it's just a brand that nobody wants, unfortunately. And I just can't see it ever being a success. And unfortunately, it's a personal opinion, but I can't see it working. Look how much Lexus has had to battle over the years to get to the position they're in. And they've done that through brilliant customer service and some great cars, but it's been very, very tough for them. Nissan tried it with Infiniti. Some of those cars were okay, but I think compared to Genesis, they're just a little bit meh. I mean, they've got nothing about them. I can't describe you. If you could describe to me who would buy a Genesis, then I'd understand how the brand works. But
I think if I can, we will move on. But I think Genesis, for me, the last time I drove a Genesis, which was a G80 or something, it was a big saloon thing, electric thing. What it felt like to me was a sort of Mercedes of 10 years ago. And I mean that in a nice way. Because Mercedes,
in a nice way.
I do mean that in a nice way. Because you really get in it and it's just very comfortable and it's very well built and all this sort of stuff. If you hop in a Mercedes now, it's all very chintzy. And I wonder if there's a section of the market that gets in, let's say, an i7 or a BMW 7 Series with its hundreds of screens and electronic stuff to change where the air vents go and all this stuff, or gets in a Mercedes and thinks, whoa, this is all a bit much. They would suit a Genesis.
We'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Let's move on.
Yeah, stop kicking Genesis. Sorry.
So I'm going to... Is it my turn? Yes, it is.
It is.
I've got some news about the GWM Aura.
Oh, have you? Excellent.
Yeah. The funky cat is dead. Long live.
Oh, no.
The GWM Aura 03.
So this is more jazzy than the original name. Wow.
So GWM Aura, for people that aren't aware, which I'm sure you all are, it's Great Wall Motors, isn't it? The people that once brought us the Steed pickup truck. Obviously much more successful now than they were when that was around. But the Aura Funky Cat is a very good-looking sort of VW ID.3-sized electric car, which has come to these shores and has set up in various places. The sort of model Aura, GM, GWM, whatever they're called, they're using is to target dealers where they can sort of slot it into traditionally, let's say, used car sites. So, for example, Peter Vardy has... Am I right in thinking Peter Vardy's got a franchise of this and is one of his cars supermarket type things?
Has indeed.
Yeah. Thanks for Googling that while I said it. BYD, following a similar model. James and I went to a BYD dealer the other day. But they've only got one car at the minute, which is this funky cat. There's some question as to whether that was a good name or not. Those questions arrived when the funky cat arrived, but they've only just been sort of fixed as they've decided to rename it the 03. I don't know why Aura came up with the name funky cat, because it's not even the name of it in China. In China, it's called Good Cat. So I'm not sure where funky had to come from or why it had to be continued to call cat. But they've now had a bit of a rethink and realized that actually, I'm assuming, because I wasn't in the meeting, but I'm assuming they've realized that it might be a little bit off-putting. Perhaps 1, 2, 3, and 4 might be better names for your future lineup of cars.
I mean, it's quite simple, isn't it? I mean, there's an interesting line in this story, though, that the renaming also coincides, says James Baxter, who wrote this, with the ending of an amicable settlement of an opposition to the registration of the Funky Cat trademark in the UK market. So clearly somebody else feels so passionate about funky cats that they weren't happy that it was on the back of a EV hatchback, and they wanted to protect that brand. I've just Googled Funky Cat to see what that other company was. Can't find anything. So clearly it was a trademark that was worth protecting.
How bizarre. Well, is it more desirable to you if it's called the 03? What do you think?
It's yes, I think I'd probably say it is. I think
good. Okay, we'll move
awful
on.
Name, an awful name, and I'm glad it's consigned to the bin. But I never sit on the fence, John, as you know. Ollie, what do you think of these this influx of EV brands that we're getting? These Chinese EV brands like GWM. You've got BYD, as John's mentioned. We've got NIO on its way. We've got many of these companies coming to steal market share. I mean, mm-hmm. You've been paying close attention to them.
Yeah, I think it's a big trend within the industry within the market. I think it's going to be really interesting what happens over the next three to 5 years. I think it's coming from quite obviously a low base and entering the market with a bit of a view to, I guess, disrupting more of the established manufacturers and within the market. On, I guess, on the point of the funky cat, I think it's not it's probably not the sort of thing that would appeal to me. It's I think if my 9-year-old daughter was in the market to buy a new car, she might be kind of really really on that. Maybe the branding needs a little work. But yeah, one of the big overall trends that's happening in the market at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, cats are very popular, aren't they, John, on social media and stuff. So, I mean, maybe that was what they were thinking. It was they'll get some mad cat people who like that car.
Right, yeah, possibly. I do think as well they need to drop their prices of it a little bit. Because when it arrived, I think it was going to be competitively priced, and I will say I don't think it is anymore.
I mean, these Chinese brands really are going to be shaking up the market. I mean, going back to that that Stellantis interview I had earlier this week, that was one of my questions. And just how scared are they that these brands are coming in and stealing market share, especially when you look at Stellantis' brands of Jeep, Alfa Romeo, DS, which we've mentioned before. They're ripe for the taking, really. And one of the points that was made by the dealers that I spoke to in advance is like, how on earth have these traditional brands like Vauxhall let Chinese brands like MG overtake them in terms of the market share? I mean, it just shows you how the sands are shifting in the industry. It's going to be really interesting to watch what happens over the next few years when more of these come in. Anyway, I'll move us on, shall I?
Yes, please.
Okay, let's find my next story, which is news from BMW. And this was another exclusive, John. Yes, it was. Yeah, and fortunately came from another leak. Thank you, very very leaky sources we've got this week, which is always welcomed. And this is news that BMW Group has pushed back agency sales even further. So they were planning to change their brand, Mini in particular, to agency sales next year. That's now been pushed back by at least 6 months to 2025. An announcement was made to the network, and the manufacturer has confirmed that. BMW is always going to be moving to agency sales in 2026, so a lot further away than Mini, but Mini was going to be first. And there was actually a lot of people welcomed this news when we published it. It was a very popular story on the website and got lots of comments on social media from people saying, thankfully they've done it and I'm glad they have. There are some people out there who are very vocal against agency, as we know, and see it as a land grab for margin from the manufacturers. And let's face it, Mercedes hasn't had the easiest of times with their transition to agency sales this year. BMW are going to be watching their rivals very, very closely, seeing how they're managing that transition. And I wouldn't be surprised if that scared them off a little bit further. But there will be a lot of happy dealers out there reading this news, seeing that it's been pushed back a little bit further. What did you think, John?
Quelle surprise. That was my thought. I mean, I feel like you could almost get AI to write these, stories at this point. Is have a guesstimate as to which brand will next say, oh, we're just going to slightly delay the implementation of this because of X reason or another. I think it's just proving to be very complicated, isn't it?
Well, and it just doesn't really work, does it? For some manufacturers, it's just not working. And I mean, I just cannot understand personally why they are messing with a system that works. You've got entrepreneurial dealers out there that are very good at dealing in their local markets, selling their cars to the local people and their expertise at managing their businesses. I mean, dealers are very, very complicated businesses to work in. I just think, well, why do the manufacturers want to muscle in on that? I get they want to make some money. I get that they want to make more money. But there's surely there's other ways of doing that. I don't know. Ollie, what were your thoughts on this one? I mean, agency is a huge topic at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess given the closeness that that Motorway works with dealers, you can probably understand what we're thinking on this kind of thing. We've spoken already about kind of some of the big shifts that are going on within the industry, and I think we're gonna learn a lot over the next probably 2 years with the model that Mercedes have taken, and I think is it Volvo and Audi as well who are focusing on their EVs using an agency sales model. I guess from the perspective of the manufacturers, I can probably understand why one price across, you know, the whole of the sites makes sense. They've probably got half an eye on the direct to consumer model that's, you know, favored by Tesla, etc. But yeah, it's clearly taking away from the ability to franchise dealers to cut a deal and to use some of that entrepreneurial spirit which they're known for and do really well in. I think it probably does face a little bit more focus on the used car market. It becomes, I guess, ever more important for dealers to create margin where they can in that particular market if they're being tied to one particular price through an agency model. So, interesting developments. And I think, you know, BMW decided to take a bit of a watching brief on it, you know, given what's happening, it's probably a sensible option to take at this point.
Yeah, well, I think I agree with John that there will be many manufacturers kicking this can down the road over the next few months.
I think it's also the ones that we have seen do it, apart from Mercedes, generally speaking, they've either, as we've said, they've either done it with a toe in the water with a couple of models, haven't they? Or they've done it, they've just come into the market with that from the start. You know, Polestar arrived with their agency style agreement, but it's a lot easier to do if you're fresh to this. I think a lot of it is trying to change legacy systems over, and you've got to speak to all your partners and go through all how it's going to work, and it must be a nightmare.
Yeah. Right, your story. It is you.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to talk about JLR, one of our favourite topics on the website. But this is the news of JLR's investment in high technology, as John Bowman, who is not a user of high technology, won't mind me.
That's putting it lightly.
Chosen for the wording of this title. $10 million on high technology to thwart car thieves. So you don't need me to tell you, Jaguar Land Rover does not have, it's not having an easy time of it at the minute when it comes to car thefts. Part of that is JLR models, to JLR's credit, are quite desirable. And thieves tend to go after things that are quite desirable so that they can nick them and sell them on for a tidy profit. The issue is there's been a bit of a flaw, hasn't there? I don't think JLR will mind me saying, in the way that its keyless entry systems work, and thieves have managed to manipulate this. JLR has since worked out a way to stop this happening, and on the most recent models, so the new Range Rover is one of those, new Range Rover Sport, new Defender, I think, as well. They've all got this new tech to stop whatever it is that car thieves were doing in the way that they were previously nicking them, to stop them doing that. They're rolling that out as well to previous models, is what they say. There's no indication in this particular story as to whether you can take your previous model Range Rover into a Land Rover dealership and have this tech changed over for free, but you can have it changed. So you can have this issue where I believe you can plug into the OBD port or something, and through magic, the car can be started and a new key can be created. This is what JLR's switched off, in effect. But one thing I particularly like in this is the UKMD, Patrick McGillicuddy, is said to have made protection of vehicles his personal priority, which I think is an excellent line because it just makes me think of him. Yeah, exactly. James is doing the James Bond movements currently on camera. But it makes me think of him barricading himself outside people's homes going, no,
No. Get away.
Yes.
Get back. Get back from this Range Rover. They have had a major problem though, haven't they? I mean,
they have. I mean, it's been the case for a while. I mean, I remember going to, I can't remember which video we shot at a JLR dealership, maybe 2 years ago. And I remember walking around the used car lot of this brand spanking new shiny JLR dealer, and every single Range Rover had a stop lock on the steering wheel. And I just thought, it's like we're back in the 90s again. Like, I used to see those in Rover Metros and things, not this.
Well, they were uninsurable in London for quite some time, weren't they? If you had a Range Rover, you couldn't actually get insurance for them.
That's right. I mean, JLR's own insurance company decided that they couldn't do it anymore. Their underwriters weren't having it. Yeah, not a good situation. So hopefully this is sorting it out. There's the stat here is that only 0.07% of new Range Rovers have been stolen since 2022.
I'd love to know how many that was, rather than a percentage.
You could probably work it out, James, if you sat down with, you know, the figure, the number of Range Rovers that they sold, and that percentage. Or get Kate to do it.
I was going to say, that would involve maths, and I'm not very good at maths.
Yeah, but that is a much lower percentage point than the, I think there was, it was something like 1% or 1 to 3% or something of Range Rovers were being stolen. It was a stupidly high amount. So hopefully this gets to the bottom of it and sorts it, because it's just embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not the only problem JLR have at the minute, of course, but yes.
Can I move us on to my last story?
Yes.
Which is a final plug. Please allow me this. But this is an interview that I did with Dash Gupta for our other podcast, which is the Car Dealer Inspiring Leaders podcast, which you can find on your favourite podcast platform right now or on YouTube. But this was an interview I did with Dash. It's the first time he's spoken out since he left Marshall Motor Group as the CEO last year after Constellation bought them out in that £325 million deal. And Dash was talking about all his career, talked about what has inspired him and the people who have inspired him, and gave some amazing advice to people who wanted to follow his very successful footsteps in the industry. But I think the bit that was the most interesting to me, or not that what those bits weren't interesting, but the bit that really piqued my interest was where he just talked about that time after leaving Marshall Motor Group and how Marshall's been his baby, and that he said basically people can probably imagine how he felt about leaving. I mean, we know that it was a very difficult time, and probably something that he didn't want to do. He said the reason that he didn't stay on is he was no longer going to be the CEO for a standalone group. He was going to be subsumed into that much bigger entity. And in that situation, strategy was not going to sit with him. It was going to sit elsewhere. And we know that Dash likes to lead from the front. He's very inspiring when it comes to his workforce, and they love him for it. And if he wasn't going to be able to do that and act autonomously, then I can understand why he stepped away and decided to do something different. We did ask him about what he's going to do next, didn't we? And he sort of talked a little bit about the fact that he would love another job in the motor trade, but all the top jobs are filled. All the people that are in roles that he would love to do are doing them very successfully, and I'm sure he doesn't want to go in there and elbow them out. So he's currently working with Ford on their agency transition, which I thought was fascinating. That he's kind of gamekeeper term poacher, moving over to the dark side, working with the manufacturer about how agency sales are going to work. Which he says he's very open-minded to, which I'm sure he is. He's probably contractually obliged to say so. But interesting to see he's doing that work. I love the chat with him. He sent me some of the feedback he's had this week, and he said he's been very, very popular with his network. He says he hasn't stopped getting messages, emails from people who loved it. And I think it was because he was so honest and very inspirational in his words for the next generation. And I think that sort of sums up Dash's ethos, really. He ran that Marshall business like a family, and he treated his employees incredibly well. And I mean, you only have to look back how he looked after people during the pandemic. And the chats that we were having with him at the time about how much those people meant to him. And that really came across in the podcast. So, it's a 52-minute chat. And if people have got time, please go and listen to it, because
I really enjoyed it. And I think it's incredibly inspiring what you had to say. What did you think, John? I mean, you were there, weren't you, helping me record it? So
I was, yeah. Yeah, I thought it's very interesting. I mean, I can be candid and say that we've been desperate to get Dash on that podcast for
some time.
obviously, all the other podcast guests have been gladly received. But it was just that we arranged Dash for one of the early ones, didn't we? And then various illness or diary conflicts or whatever, and he's ended up being now. But yes, it was one I was looking forward to, because I think, you know, obviously you're in dialogue with Dash quite a lot, aren't you? But it's nice to hear from him and see what he is up to. Because there was a period once he obviously went on gardening leave, as he calls it, to tend to his garden. And then there was a period of, where's he gonna reappear next? Ooh, what's he up to? You know, there's an air of mystery about somebody that's been front and center of the motor trade for so long to just, I don't want to say disappear, but he's not out there in quite the same way.
I think
I thought he might appear perhaps with a new franchise, a bit like John O'Hanlon, you know, setting up a new dealership group himself. I thought that might happen. I thought he might suddenly appear fronting one of these new super groups after some acquisitions from a foreign company, you know, that sort of thing. But it's all been very quiet. But he's obviously been biding his time and, you know, choosing carefully what he wants to do, hasn't he?
It will be such a shame if he leaves the motor industry. And I think the very fact that we're still talking about someone like Dash 18 months after he left the industry shows how big a hole he's left. So I'm sure he'd love a job back in the motor trade. He did say
he's had lots of offers, we should say.
Yes, I think it's about finding the right one, isn't it? It's about finding the right one. But I would personally be very upset if we didn't see him return. Ollie, did you catch that podcast? And I mean, what did you think?
It is now on my list of podcasts to listen to.
Oh, good man!
I haven't caught it now. but from what you're saying, you know, we've spoken a lot on this podcast about some of the challenges in the industry and some of the disruption that's going on. It's even more important then for, you know, inspiring leaders like Dash to remain part of the industry and to be playing a really, really strong role within it. It's on my list, James.
Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoy it. Excellent. Right, John, that is all my stories.
I'm going to squeeze in one more at the end.
Please,
which
do.
Is the record-breaking amount that Bangs for Ben has raised this year. So this is Bangs for Ben 2023. All the teams went off on a trip around Ireland. 38 teams, in fact, went off on a trip around Ireland. And they've raised money partially by buying a car, well, donating a car that then goes through an auction. But the majority of the money now comes from fundraising outside of that. So 28,000 has been raised from selling the cars, which is not bad, actually, for a load of bangers.
No.
62,950 has been made from fundraising. So that's a total of 91,000, as I say. So that's an incredible amount of money that these dealers have raised. And I think we don't really do round of applauses on this podcast, but I mean, I will.
Oh, well done. Yeah. What are you going to dub that in afterwards?
Oh, did that not come through? Oh, that was awkward. I clapped my hands. Anyway. Yeah. So that's really good news for a really worthy cause. And of course, we'll be raising money for Ben with our charity raffle at this year's Used Car Awards on Monday as well. So I don't know if we'll raise quite that much.
No.
But hopefully, we can add to that.
And 10% of the ticket proceeds from Car Dealer Live 24 will also be going to Ben. So if you get that Black Friday deal, you'll be helping them too.
So I was going to ask, James, when you took off on Bangers for Ben the first time.
Yes.
Because this was your baby, wasn't it? Really, it was just your excuse to go to Scotland, wasn't it?
Yes. It was basically my excuse to go to Scotland with some mates in some old cars, which were £250 at the time. I don't think you'd get a Mondeo ST20 for £250 now, but that's what I bought, and I had a fantastic time and we really enjoyed it. And yeah, we sold those cars at the end of it, handed the money over to Ben for a big feature in the magazine. Still got that magazine issue where we published that first story, and yeah, it just grew legs from there, as the term is. And it's great to see it continue and raise so much money over the years. But £91,000 is amazing.
Well done, all.
Well done.
That is the end of my stories. So I don't know why I said that like that. Ollie, before we ask for your verdicts, are there any stories you think we've missed?
I think you've covered all the ones that I thought we would be covering today. So no.
Excellent. That's what we like. So I'm going to have to ask you, who do you think chose the best stories? Who do you think is the winner?
Well, I think like I said, I think we've spoken a lot today about some of the challenges and disruption. So I'm gonna be really glass half full here, and I'm gonna go with the first story that we spoke about. So it's Nissan's ongoing investment in Sunderland. So I think this is a really good vote of confidence for the UK industry in the region, and you know, Northeast really setting itself up as a bit of a leading region in the electrical vehicle world. So yeah, that's my winner for the week.
Excellent.
Well done, John.
Back in the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what is it? 10-1 now or
something like that. Nobody's counting, James. Nobody's counting.
I am.
Oh God. Okay. Well, on that note, all that's left for me to say is thank you, Ollie, for judging today. It's been great to have you on, and thank you for the win. It's very kind of you. I think it was about time.
Yeah, about time.
And thank you as well to James for competing. And thank you for listening.
Problems.
Thank you, James. We'll be back next week. Okay, here you go.
Yeah, just to interrupt. Yeah, just good luck to everybody at the Used Car Awards on Monday. And we're very much looking forward to seeing the industry there. So good luck all.
Yes, we certainly are. So if we don't see you at the Used Car Awards, we'll see you next week for another episode. Make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you're listening on Spotify, swipe up now and vote on who you think won, because it just makes James's day to see that he's winning. I mean, I don't really know why. Man's got a Porsche. I mean, he's got other things going on, but the poll is important to him. If you want to check out the stories we mentioned today, you can click the links in the show notes below or head to cardithemagazine.co.uk, where you'll find those and much more news besides. Thanks again, and until next time, goodbye.